My name is Gabby Soto. I am 18 years old. Today is May the 3rd, and I am speaking with my mom, Charlotte Wilson, and we are recording this in Glenview, Illinois. So hi.
Hello.
My first question is, first, where are you from?
I was born on a U.S. Army military base in Seoul, South Korea.
All right. How did you end up in America?
Well, my dad being stationed in the Army had orders to come back home. So he, my mom, and I came to Chicago in June of 1971.
Mm.
My parents met because my dad was serving in Vietnam, in the Vietnam War during that time, and in between his tours of duty, he stayed in my mom's family's hotel. So he saw my mom. He fell in love. It was kind of funny. And he actually used an interpreter, and he courted her for 2 years until finally he asked her to marry him, and she said yes. So my mom would like to tell me the story of how she saved my dad's life, because in order to marry her, he had to get special permission from his commander. And so he was on special leave when they got married. And sadly, when he returned to his company, where they were in Vietnam, there were no survivors. They had all died. So my mom would always love to tell me about the story of how she literally saved my dad's life by marrying him.
Mm. That's so cute. Growing up in America, since you moved here when you were really young, right?
Yeah, so I was 6 months old when we first moved here. When we first moved here, we lived on Sedgwick, and at that time it was called like Old Town, and it was predominantly an African-American neighborhood. My dad had a hard time once his enlistment was over. He had a very hard time finding civilian jobs because he got his GED in Germany while he was in the Army. So basically my parents were on welfare at the time, and my mom didn't know English, so she was very very smart. So she literally, in order to get around the neighborhood and the city itself, she would use street lights and landmarks in order to find her way around. Unfortunately, my dad was also an alcoholic, which was a result of his service in Vietnam. So sometimes he would go on binges and leave my mom and myself. And since my mom didn't know English and didn't have a job, she would be left to try to care for us. And so she would tell me how, our electricity would get cut off, and she didn't have money for groceries, and so she would just constantly feed me water, and she herself would drink water until she was able to go to the local grocery store, which was called Terry's. And thankfully the owner, he knew my family and he knew my mom and dad, and he opened up a line of credit so that she would be able to buy groceries until my dad would come have his drinking binges, and whatever job he could find, whatever money he got paid, then that's how my parents paid the bills. So after living there for maybe 2 years, they moved into the Lincoln Park area, and we lived on the 2900 block of North Lincoln. And at that time, it was predominantly white. There were no other minorities in the neighborhood, except for the Italian wholesale produce owners who would deliver fruits and vegetables to different stores and restaurants around the city. And so my dad was able to be a delivery driver for them for several years. And he got paid cash for that job. And then eventually my dad's aunt, who would also take care of me as a baby, would take my mom to like an employment agency, and she got a job downtown on Canal and Taylor at a bookbinding company that's no longer there. And she would work assembling books and then later CDs when they came out.
That's really cool, actually. So like while you were growing up, like initially, like did you feel like you were welcomed, rejected, or like generally ignored?
Because there weren't any minorities in our neighborhood, when it was time for me to go to kindergarten, my dad tried several schools, including some Catholic schools, but I don't think he or my mom could really afford them. So the neighborhood school was Burley Elementary School, which is at 1630 West Berry, is still there. And so I was enrolled there, but I was the first minority at that school. So sadly, when I first went there, I would get teased and bullied a lot, and I would come home crying because the kids there would make fun of me and call me the N-word, because I was really the first student to integrate that school. Not really know if this is true or not. I don't know if there would be any documentation anywhere, but of course my family likes to tell the story that my uncle, who was an attorney at the time, supposedly went to Burley and had a talk with the principal. And when my family mentioned lawsuit, I don't know how the activity stopped, but it did. And the next year, during my first grade year at Burley, we received an African-American female principal, Mrs. Roby. And when she came, she was there even after I graduated from Burley in 1984. So when she came, it seemed as if maybe in second or third grade, and then as I got older, more and more minority students would come. I had Philippine classmates, I had European classmates, I had some classmates from India, and then eventually by the time I got to like sixth or seventh grade, there were maybe one or two other African American students as well.
Okay. So like once you got a lot more like, I don't know if it's like peers, but like people like that are this like in your minority group, since you are Korean and African American, did like the bullying ever like completely like stop in elementary school? Like did you continue to face kind of harassment within like elementary school after your principal joined?
No, and the ironic thing was we had a very integrated teaching staff at Burley. My kindergarten teacher, my PE teacher, the librarian, my fourth grade teacher were all African-American women. My seventh grade social studies teacher was an African-American male. I had a Japanese-American sixth grade teacher. So I thought it was very ironic that the staff was so diverse and integrated, but the students took a while longer to integrate Burley. Mm-hmm. But you know, I feel to this day that racism and prejudice is taught. It's not something that's inherent in children. So after those issues I had when I first went to Burley at, in the kindergarten year, I feel like I had some good friendships in school. I loved school. Sadly, when my mom was 9, she had to drop out of school to take care of her brothers and sisters. And as I already stated earlier, my dad had to get his GED through the military. So my mom always told me that I was going to school not just for me, but she would specifically say for her, but I always felt like I was going for the whole family, like I was representing all of us. So she instilled in me a love for learning, and it would actually make me feel bad when I would struggle with homework or things that I didn't understand because my parents wanted to help me, you know, but they felt like they couldn't because they didn't know how to help me with schoolwork.
Let's see. What would you say was maybe your favorite memory in school?
My favorite memory in school has to be when I got double promoted. Kind of, but not really. I was placed in a split class for 4th and 5th grade. So my teacher had to teach both 4th grade and 5th grade students. But she felt that I was doing so well that I wouldn't have to go through 5th grade because I was in the classroom already and had already mastered the concepts. So I actually skipped 5th grade and went from 4th to 6th grade.
That's cool. So when did you become an American, but also when did you were American, right? Because you were born on a military base. So did you always kind of feel American, or did you, like, was there a time where you kind of accepted, like you felt like everybody else, like, especially because of, like, kind of the integration period that you kind of had to go through?
Growing up, I did have a lot of issues with which side of my culture to identify with. Because my mom's family stayed in Korea, I was mostly around my dad's family. So they would, of course, identify me as being African American, but at the same time, I didn't want to ignore my Korean culture either, because my mom was such a huge part of an influence in my life. So I was always torn because I didn't really belong as a full African American, and I didn't really belong as a full Korean, especially because I couldn't speak or read or write the Korean language. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, once I settled into school was kind of my identity. That was kind of my leveling ground, and I did feel, you know, as if I were American, as if I belonged. My teachers, thankfully, instilled in me a love of learning, and they encouraged me and supported me, and I participated in extracurricular activities. Like, every year, you would call it a talent show now, we would have a gym show, and my PE teacher would always include me every year in some aspect of the show. So that really built my self-confidence and my self-esteem. But I have to tell you, all that came crashing down in 7th grade. Again, I told you Mr. Gibbs was African American. He's my social studies teacher and my homeroom teacher. And there was this student, again, it was still predominantly white, but it was much more integrated. I had Philippine classmates, I had, you know, European ones, and some of them were even darker skinned than me. But we were going to the bathroom one day, and both of us happened to be at the end of our lines, and I don't know what started the argument. I don't know if he was talking, if I was talking, if someone told someone to be quiet. All I remember is I heard him call me a nigger, and I don't know, I guess everything that I thought I had overcome from kindergarten and repressed all came back in that 1 second, and I got very angry, and I pushed him in the corner of the room and just attacked him. Basically, I started punching him, and of course the students went and called my teacher, and he came and he broke us up. And that was the first time I had ever done anything that would get me in trouble. I was always an honor roll student. I was always on my best behavior. And that was the first time I ever got into a fight at school. And then both of our parents were called, of course, and we had to have a meeting after school. And I was really upset that I got in trouble because he called me the N-word. And, of course, now that I'm a teacher, fighting is wrong, and we should not be doing that. We tell our students all the time, tell an adult, tell the teacher. But at that time, I just reacted. I totally did not think. And I was very angry that I was getting in trouble when he had used such a hurtful name against me, especially because my teacher was African-American and my dad is African-American.
How did your parents react?
So I got lectured, of course, from both parents, but I didn't get in trouble because I told them why.
Yeah.
Anyway, my dad came to school to have the meeting, but the boy's family, his name was Gerald, they did not show up. So I think he was very embarrassed about that. And so then my anger turned to, like, pity for him. I felt bad because my dad, who never took off work for anything, was always at work. He took off to come, and no one from Gerald's family came. Mm-hmm. And so I was further upset when my dad and Mr. Gibbs decided to have a conversation about the state of the world in general and other things other than the issue at hand. And I had to sit there and listen to them as if this whole issue had not occurred. This boy had called me the N-word, and we're not going to talk about that. So basically, I got another verbal reprimand from that meeting from both my dad and Mr. Gibbs, and they continued to have their own conversation. And that's how that meeting went.
That's good. Would you, like, I don't know if, like, that is what you would say, but if not, like, what has been, like, the most difficult part for you to feel and, like, I don't know, like, what's been, like, the most difficult part to, like, accept, like the, yes, like, this is, like, I feel American, like, is it, like, other than, like, has there been anything else that kind of has brought you down or, like, made you question that? Or
I have to say no, but I think I also have the advantage of my mom teaching herself how to speak English. So English was the only language spoken to me at home. And I think that had my mom spoken to me in Korean and I learned how to speak Korean and I were as fluent in Korean as I am in English, like a lot of our English language learner students are today, that maybe I would have had a more difficult time identifying being American. But since English was the only language that we spoke at home and that I learned, I feel like I just always felt American or that I belonged just because English was our language.
Mm-hmm. So going back to, like, identity, which is kind of relating to what you just said. So, like, immigrants, like, obviously, I feel like, they were and, like, they are, like, classified by, like, what country they're from and, like, what the color of their skin is. What was this like for you? Like, did you experience, like, anybody kind of, like, give you, like, weird looks? Like, especially, like, when you were out with your mom, because, like, you guys look different and stuff, so I feel like, did you ever, like, experience, like, this, like, us and them mentality, or, like, this is kind of similar to my last question, but, like, you know, like, what was, like, it like for you kind of being biracial and, like, having to deal with, like, I don't know, being both and, like, not necessarily, like, and being kind of confused with, like, identity? And
being biracial was really hard for me growing up because, as I said, I was not fully accepted by as being African-American 100% or being Korean 100%. And actually, my mom would always say that You know, she would never take me back to Korea despite whatever problems she or my dad had, because she feared for the way that I would be treated in Korea, being half African American, even more than the way I was being treated here in the United States for being biracial. I always resented filling out test forms at school where they always asked your race and you always had to choose one. It always said, you know, choose your race and choose one. And I was never allowed to choose both. And I remember so clearly, even being a freshman at Lincoln Park High School, super diverse, in 1984, my division teacher saying, well, you know, if you have one drop of African-American blood in you, you know that you're considered African-American, so that's what you have to choose. And I remember always rebelling, because I felt like in choosing African-American, I was turning my back on my mom. So I would always be the rebel, and I would fill in both circles for Asian and African-American, and I didn't care, because I said, I'm not going to choose, and I have 50% African-American, 50% Korean, and I'm not going to just choose one. Also, growing up watching TV, most of the shows on television were of Caucasian families. There were no Korean families. There were very few African-American families, and there certainly weren't any biracial or mixed families. Toys, again, same thing. You have to pick the white doll or the black doll. And it wasn't until maybe I got almost to the age of not being able to play with dolls anymore that I started seeing Hispanic dolls. And even now as an adult, slowly we're starting to get Asian looking dolls, but there certainly weren't any African American, Korean, celebrities, sports stars, television shows, dolls, pictures in magazines, stories in the books I read at school. There was none of that. So that was a constant struggle for me. I felt like people singled me out because I did look different. When I was with my dad, I was much lighter than him, so we would get looks. When I was with my mom, I was darker than her, so yes, we would get looks. But then people would look at my eyes, because my eyes are kind of almond-shaped, and then they go, oh, and then it would click. And then I remember being in school and kids saying, oh, you know, where are you from? Or even if I told them I was born in Korea, they're like, what's that? They'd never heard of Korea. Oh, is that like China? Oh, is that like Japan? And it's like, no, it's Korea. That was hard.
So in class, we talked about like this like study that was done that isn't necessarily like applicable sometimes, but like there's this like study that was done on like little children like years ago, and it was like there's the black doll, there's a white doll, like which one's nicer, which one, you know, like did you ever kind of like have that, like did you ever feel like subconsciously like inferior, do you think, like, or did you take that kind of like discrimination and like with the help of your parents and with like your like passion for learning, like did you take, like would you have take, like do you think you would have picked the black doll or the white doll?
Well, I can tell you right now, because my mom would take me Christmas shopping for dolls for me and my cousin Jada. Her dad and my dad are brothers, and her mom was African American, so I would get the white Barbie and she would get the black Barbie. And I remember one Christmas my uncle, I don't know, maybe he got offended or something. I think we got Jada a white Barbie, like my Barbie, because we're both only children. We would cling to each other as if we were sisters when we would see each other, because we were both, you know, so lonely, and our dads were brothers. Mm-hmm. And I remember my uncle got, I don't know if he was offended or what, but I remember him pulling my dad aside and kind of saying, hey, why did you get Jada this white doll? She's not white. And I don't think my parents looked at the doll as being a white doll. I think it was that they let me pick, first of all, and I'm the one that picked the doll. And I honestly don't know why I identify more with the white Barbies than the African-American Barbies, but I think it's exactly what you said. Like, something about the way the hair was. I think I liked the hair on the white Barbie better than the ones on the black Barbies.
And the clothes.
And yeah, just their skin tone was so dark, and the white Barbie was so white. I don't know, and there was no in the middle. So I knew that I didn't look anything like the white Barbie, but I also knew I didn't look like the black Barbie.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, maybe because on Saturday mornings when I would see the commercials that came on with the cartoons,
it was the white Barbie.
It was the white Barbie that was advertised.
Mm. Okay. And there's a little question.
So yeah, so like all my Barbies, most of my toys, even that my family would buy for me, my African American family, they were white dolls. I honestly don't think anyone ever gifted me, including my uncle who got so offended with a black Barbie.
If you could go back, you have lived pretty much your whole life in America, but is there anything you would like want to change about, like, what, I don't know, what's happened in your life?
Well, I'm very proud of my parents for having the courage, especially my mom. Another funny little story she likes to tell is that when my dad was courting her, she didn't know that much about American culture because they're pretty sheltered in Korea until that time, I believe. So he would show her pictures of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and President Kennedy and the White House. And he actually told my mom that was his house. And my mom actually believed him. And I think that's why she said yes, that she would marry him. So she was in for the shock of her life when they got here. And instead of the White House, they were kind of like in a roach-infested Section 8 apartment in the middle of an all-black neighborhood. So I think my mom was extremely brave. She didn't, you know, bat an eye. She didn't cry or fight or say, take me back to Korea. She lived there, and she raised me, and she taught herself, you know, English so that she could communicate with people. And then somehow they found their way to Lincoln Park, which is so integrated today that back then was not, and yet they weren't really harassed or treated badly by the white neighbors and our German landlord who rented them the apartment. And I think that says a lot. So other than that first year at Burley, I don't think I would change anything because my parents always let me know that I was loved. And despite growing up not being quite as integrated as it is today, I feel like it helped shape me and made me the person who I am today, and gives me insight in raising my daughter, who's not only African-American and Korean, but she's African-American, Korean, and Guatemalan. So there we go.
So kind of going off of that too, what would you say are some kind of like things that you take from either like hardships you went through, like things your parents taught you, things you like learned from school, like a learning curve, like how, like what would you say like that are some things that you kind of took from that and apply it to either raising your daughter, whoever that is, and also like your kids, because you're a teacher at school, right?
That's cool. Yes.
So like, what are, like, do you ever feel, I don't know, like overprotective or I don't know, like closely related to minorities, whether that be like staff, like other staff at like that teach at your school, or like students, student minorities, do you feel like protective or closer to them?
I have a soft spot in my heart for all English language learners, and especially my first generation students who come, whose parents have come here, who are very much like my parents, working labor jobs, working long hours, to give their children the best they can, because they feel like education is the key for their children to have a better future. And I feel like I am at an advantage because I look at things more globally, and I don't think I would have done that had I been born or raised in just one culture. I think having two cultures has always made me examine everything as broadly as I could. And so I try to be very open-minded. I try to be very liberal. At the same time, I impress on my daughter and my students how important education is, just like my mom impressed that upon me, because I do feel like knowledge is power, as cliched as that sounds. I feel like that's the way that you get ahead. That's the way that you're able to make choices instead of having choices made for you. And I feel as a parent, every parent wants their children to struggle less and to be more successful in order to be happier and to have the things that they want. So I try to instill that as much as I can in my daughter and my students as well. But even as an adult right now, I don't really fully identify with either culture. I'm still torn and in the middle, even though my parents are no longer here with me. But I still try to carry the things that they showed me and they taught me by example. But I love seeing all of my racially diverse students and my multiracial, multi-ethnic students, because I feel like that's the way the world is going. And whereas when I was a child, I thought that I felt like I was ugly because I couldn't identify with like one culture or one race. When I see children mixed children today, I think it's the most beautiful thing in the world. So.
Oh, and then do you find yourself interested in kind of like political like discussions that end up happening about kind of the national conversation of immigration, like yes. DACA, like Dreamers and
very stuff. Much so. Interestingly enough, this is also my first year teaching 7th grade social studies. And so we're talking about the history of America, and the foundation of America is immigration. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes our country so beautiful. That's what makes our country so strong, because of the mix of different cultures and diversity, and that's what makes our country a beacon to every other country. And with all of our flaws and all of our faults, it's still the strongest and most beautiful because of that diversity. And I don't think anyone has the right as an immigrant to tell another immigrant that they don't belong here or they should not be allowed to come here, because that is what this country is. So I feel very strongly about equal rights for everyone. And maybe, you know, there should be laws that should be followed in terms of people coming here, how they get here, how long they stay here, whether or not they get citizenship. And I tell my students all the time, which is why I try to educate them with so many things as much as I can, and I keep telling them that they need to be the voice and they need to be advocates, so that they don't just become accepting of what is, that they use their vote, that they're able to have their voice, and that they have the power to shape and form this country, because they are a part of this country. This is their country, and they have just as much of a right to be here as everyone else.
And then another question I just thought of. So, I've definitely, like, well, it's kind of breaking character, but I've totally been to, like, a couple of your classes sometimes, and then I've heard you also come home, like, talking about how, like, sometimes you get frustrated with students because they kind of follow this, like, generalized stereotype or, like, stigma, I guess, against their minority. Like, what, like, why do you feel, like, do you feel that, like, there is a constant, like, I don't want to say, like, eye, like, watching, or do you, like, if there's, like, a certain, hold on, let me, like, why is that, like, important to you? Like, I get it, like, you know, like, that it's good to, like, make sure that, like, people are successful, but at the same time, like, why, like, sometimes do you feel that it's important to tell your students, like, make sure that, like, you don't leave your, like, pants sagged, or, like, you don't, like, fail in school because that's what people want to see, or something similar, like, along those lines? Like, do you feel that there is, like, do you feel that there are people that want to see, like, black people as, like, and, like,
see them fail?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I always focus on my minority students, especially my boys, because they are so bright and intelligent, but for whatever reason, maybe it's because they're 12, they don't feel like they have to put effort into their schoolwork, that it's not cool to be smart, that, you know, life is just going to happen for them. So there have been many times when I've taken them aside and had the talk, you know, what color is your skin? What kind of job do you see waiting for you if you just get by? If you put no effort into your work, like, how do you see your future? And, you know, and I do tell them, I said, there are people in this world who already have you peg-holed as being, you know, Hispanic boy with, you know, immigrant parents. Okay, well, they're not going to really be a threat to me in the corporate world, or, you know, African-American, you know, sagging pants, you know, whatever attitude. Okay, well, I don't have to worry about him taking my job as a neurosurgeon, you know, at Northwestern. So, you know, I try to tell them that, you know, in addition to having a responsibility to themselves, to their parents, they have a responsibility to all of us to overcome those stereotypes, that they're just, you know, fitting the mold. You're letting them win. You're showing them exactly what they already believe about you. You know, you need to be different. You need to be strong. You need to prove them wrong. Hey, I am that neurosurgeon. I'm the next astronaut about to go do whatever in the International Space Station. But you have to apply yourself. You have to work for it. Nothing in life is handed to you. There's always competition. There's always going to be someone brighter or smarter, but you know what? If you have that drive, if you have that motivation, if you're willing to work for it, that could be the key to put you over the top. So that goes back to what I said before, you know, about my students being able to choose what schools they want to go to choose what courses they take and what, you know, professions they pursue, as opposed to, oh, well, you know, well, you didn't do the work, so this is what you can do.
Mm-hmm. And then just a final question, kind of, like, how do you want people to see you? Like, how, what do you want, like, your, like, image or legacy to kind of be?
I would say the legacy that I want is, I would love, you know, kind of like what Dr. King said in his I Have a Dream speech, I would love for people to stop looking at the color of skin, even my mixed skin, and look at the character, look at the person. Don't be prejudging people on the basis of how they look. My students should be able to wear hoodies and jeans and Vans and not be peg-holed by other people. And my legacy, the only legacy I want to leave behind, is I want all of my friends, my family, my students, to know that I love them very much and I push them or I advise them or, you know, I do the things I do or I tell them I love them because I genuinely do. And I want them all to be happy in whatever paths they choose. And I think that we all should have the right to choose and that choices should not be made for us. Because we're not the right color or we're not the right ethnicity. Because we're all American. You live in America, you're American. And that's what I tell my students who will tell me when they go visit the countries that they immigrated from and they say, oh, I'm going back to my country. No, this is your country. You live here. You're going back to Ecuador or you're going back to wherever. Okay, but if you live here, this is your country.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, I think it's wonderful to see so much diversity now. I see mixed couples and mixed children all over, wherever I go. But I would like to see the leaders in our country come up to the 21st century, just like the colors of the people I see around me every day, because their thinking sounds like 18th century to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.